I mean, going back as far as these cultures were at. And these were not just cultures around the world, everywhere, because there was death and disease everywhere in the world, except in these cultures. So if there wasn't death and disease in these cultures, that's why we look to see what they were eating. And like, let's say to a vitamin A, where we say you should take 5,000 units, they took 50. But they weren't taking any kind of pill. This is the foods they were eating. They ate all kinds of fresh foods, shellfish, things that were high in everything that we think that we don't understand. They also prepared their food to make sure that it was for healthy generations, for healthy babies. So, no, in these cultures, there was no disease that was stronger than them. There was no virus, and there was always viruses. There was no bacteria that could eat them. There was nothing unless they started eating processed foods. And within that is they ate organ meats, mostly raw, that repaired organ meats, organs that we have, sort of like cures like. If you could, and they ate them raw. They protected themselves with vitamin C by eating different parts of animals, you know, raw. There's just so much wisdom in each culture doing what they needed to have what it took to have perfect babies and fabulous health. And since each one was so different, but all the same, that's the thing that showed you that there wasn't anything. But as soon as they quit eating the food that had kept them healthy for centuries and started eating flour, sugar, you know, canned foods, they started getting sick and dying, and, you know, just like the rest of the world.
Right.
But just because you live in a place that doesn't have processed food, it's are you eating the amounts of A, B, A, E, D, C, you know, C, all the different things that you need to keep it so that your body is, you know, the awesome man, woman that you can be. And, you know, the rest is like, well, heck, we're way below those levels now. And look what's happened.
Yeah. So
that's my rant.
Okay, but so Chris, what you're saying, I'm thinking of what you're saying in light of what Sue said. Sue raised the issue of a virus or bacteria that would make a healthy person sick, and she admitted that the healthier you are, the more resistant you are. What you're saying is that health and good nutrition has more power against disease, against germs, than anybody thinks that it has. Is that
exactly.
Am I right?
Okay. Oh, totally.
Okay. So it's not just a question of good eating, good nutrition, making you more resistant to disease. What you're saying is it has an incredible resistance to disease to the point that there are whole cultures that don't have it.
Well, I think it was in the 50s that some brothers, I have it written in here somewhere, but anyway, they dealt with 50,000 people with heart disease, and they did it with natural vitamin E from animals. And they, you know, basically cured heart disease. And now it's like, oh, no, you don't need that much. No, way. You just need a little. Well, no, these people found out that, hey, it cures things outright. But it's like the doctors say, oh, no, you can't take that much. We have this synthetic, you know, this research done by, you know, this group that used synthetic vitamin A, E, whatever you want. And they had bad results. You know, so this natural stuff, that won't work. You know, it's just a whole bait and switch, snake oil salesman, whatever, to get you to not look at what healthy cultures ate and the amounts and the pictures and the documentation and just sort of like open up the light, you know, open up the door and let the light in. And, you know, then watch all these, you know, doctors scurry away because there's been so much research on like animal fats being good for you, on vitamin E, on vitamin A, on, you know, what we need and what it can do. And, you know, like, all this stuff just goes away and nobody knows about it. And then, you know, Procter & Gamble goes out there and tells you, you know, that their cereals are good for you because they added vitamins. But the research says, hey, the rats died quicker if you ate the product than if you ate the box.
Okay.
So, you know, who do you believe? The research that says, hey, look at the dead rat. You know, oh, look at the live one. He's eating the box. So, I mean,
Chris,
what do you do?
In your view of this, and I admire you for it. where do you put psychology or attitude towards life? And what I'm talking about is there are a lot of people that put as much weight in how we look at life itself as you're putting on nutrition. And I wonder, obviously, you would give that some weight.
Well, I like all life is precious, you know, and nobody's better than another. And when you look at just like nutrition, it's good for me, but maybe not good for you. It's just life is to be shared and honestly dealt with. I mean, then we can make good decisions, but everything is in such a, it's a national security not to know the truth about anything, and that means our drug companies, you're not supposed to tell the truth about any of those drugs, and you're not supposed to let out the results before, you know, they vote on it, and any kind of food that they go out and they say, well, what did you test, and say, oh, no, we can't release that, well, that should be released because it tells you people what's going on. And it doesn't really matter. There's so much evidence that against the stuff that hurts people that nobody looks at. And all the stuff that's right there and says, look what they found. Nobody wants to look at that either. Yeah. And, I mean, you can't look at TV and because they're all concerned with the same people of, in the end, you're sick. They take away everything you got. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just planned. Okay. You got ignorance and you got reinforcement of, you know, advertising the glitter of the good taste of this and that.
Okay. Chris, thank you for calling back. I appreciate it so much. We've got another caller online. We've only got a couple of minutes to go. Thank you so much. Bye now. We're at 55 minutes after the hour. Let's go to our phones. Back again, we have Jim. Hi, Jim.
Good afternoon, Dr. O'Brien. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Reasonably well. I haven't talked to you in quite a while. It was a very interesting caller.
It's been a while. It sure has.
Well,
Have you been well?
I just wanted to wish you well and hope that you have a successful academic year that's probably right around the corner for you.
It's been underway for 1 week, Jim, and it's wonderful. Thank you.
Very good.
You.
Well, listen.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say hello and wish you well, and I hope you have a very successful academic year for 2007-2008.
Jim, I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
You have a great week. Switch off and let the control board take its mission, right?
Okay. Listen, Jim, thank you. Good to hear from you, my friend. Bye now. We're at 56 minutes after the hour, and I guess it's time to wind down today's program. Wonderful calls. I want to thank you so much, and we touched a number of issues, and of course, this is the classic example of the fact that you try to go where the listeners and the callers take us, and I just think it's just fabulous, and I want to thank everybody, and I've never had the pleasure, and I mean that sincerely, of talking to Andy before, or Chris, or, and we did talk with Sue before, but she just was fabulous. And all I can see, and I know she's there just guzzling her Pepsi, and thank you, Sue. Very, very interesting, because what we ended up in here is an issue that I think is so, so important. There are people, and I'm in the back of my mind, I've got churning this idea, this whole global warming, this climate change issue. And the fact that there are some people that obviously most people believe that we need to address it and we need to study it, we need to deal with it. And then there's this group out there that says, no, we don't. All we need to do is just keep what we're doing and trust that science will fix anything that we screw up. And I think that's a little bit risky. And that's why I kept asking the questions especially of Chris about science, because what he's basically saying, and I think all of us would agree, that we're not going to see a situation where everybody reverts to eating the way we should. We try. Many of us try. I'm very fortunate to not only have married a wonderful person, but a person who's very, very much into nutrition and good eating and that kind of thing, and I'm blessed for it. I resist because I love the bad stuff, but she keeps me pretty much on the straight and narrow, and I appreciate that. But you know, again, there is a mentality, unfortunately, that exists in our society, which suggests that you just keep doing what you're doing because it feels good, and ultimately you trust that whatever you might do to yourself that's bad, somebody will fix it, or somebody will come up with a pill to solve it, or whatever. It's very obvious that none of that is true. We have reached the end of our day. I can't believe that we're over already, to be very honest with you. It's been a wonderful day. I want to thank you all so very, very much. Thank you for your support of the Head On Radio Network. Please stay tuned to the other programs. This network is desperately needed. I want to thank you for supporting it. I want to thank you for tuning in. Have a wonderful weekend. Be safe. Peace.
Looking at them, they were passing those things by veto-proof margins, and I'm sitting there going, please let Georgia veto it, please.
And, well, of course, the other thing is what happens when it gets to the Senate.
Well, I know, but like I say,
this is the Quality News Network. Near the end of trading this week on Wall Street, the Dow Jones is rallying up more than 140 points. We'll have the latest numbers just before today's close coming up in our business block. The Los Angeles Times reports today that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Peter Pace, is expected to recommend a large U.S. troop cut to President Bush. Pace may advise a troop reduction of nearly half because keeping more than 100,000 troops in Iraq through the end of next year would be a strain on the military. However, Pace responded today that the article was, quote, speculative. The U.S. military commander in the southeast region of Iraq says it would be a, quote, giant step backward to pull out U.S. troops from the region by the end of the year because the Iraqi forces are not ready. Yesterday, Republican Senator John Warner, just back from a trip to Iraq, said he recommended to President Bush that he start a U.S. troop pullout by Christmas. Also, according to the U.S. military, since the troop surge occurred, the number of Iraqi detainees held by the U.S. in Iraq has gone up by 50%. There are now 24,500 detainees, most of whom are Sunni Arabs. In Afghanistan, three British troops were killed by a bomb dropped from a U.S. fighter plane. They were taking part in a NATO operation against the Taliban. A Marine drill instructor in San Diego has been charged with 225 criminal counts of physically abusing recruits. Two other drill sergeants have also been charged in the case. NFL player Michael Vick filed his plea agreement today in which he admitted to bankrolling a dogfighting ring. However, the Atlanta Falcons quarterback denied that he bet on fights or helped kill pit bull dogs. In Jackson, Mississippi, the elderly Ku Klux Klansman recently convicted of murdering two black teenagers more than four decades.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right, everybody, time to get the hell up, time to move it, move it, get up, get out of bed, move it, wake up, wake up. Wake up and see what's happening to your country, wake up and see what's happening to your world, wake up and see what's happening to your life. Get up, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the numbers to call in. If you want to call in today and talk to me, you can talk to me about anything. I've got some specific things to talk about, but I've got an open mic policy. If you want to call in, the numbers are 304-658-5453 or the toll-free number 877-443-2366. You can also join us in the Head On Radio Network chat room where you can speak to some very lovely and wonderful people.
including our good friend Bob Kincaid, Ray Hinckley, ELO, and No Nanette. I love the name Nanette. Nanette is a very nice person, but every time I hear her name, I keep thinking of the play. No, no, Nanette! And actually, that play is the cause of the infamous Red Sox curse. Curse of the Bambino, because the guy who owned the Red Sox at the time sold Babe Ruth and many other players to the Yankees in order to fund his plays, among which was No, No, Nanette, which was a big hit. So he got some money out of it, but he destroyed the Red Sox baseball team for many years. But that has nothing to do with anything that I want to talk about. It's just one of those useless pieces of information. If you want to get on the Head On Radio Network chat room, you can go to headonradionetwork.com and just click on the live chat link, and then you can, like I say, talk to some of the smartest people on the Internet. How is everybody doing today? It is Friday. Oh, of course, and there's Suzanne. I'm sorry, Suzanne. I was doing it on the fly, and I didn't see it. I'm sorry. it is Friday, and we may or may not hear from our good friend Carol Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. It's my fault. I did not email her last night to see if she could be on the show. I try to get her on every Friday, but, you know, things happen, and it's been a little bit more of a hectic time for me personally in the last few days because I've been spending a lot of time looking for work. For those of you who've looked for work before, and there's a lot of you out there, I'm sure, you know what a time-consuming project it is. And it is the most difficult job you'll ever have. Because it's basically like selling yourself. And for those of you who know me and know me personally, you know my personality, you understand that selling myself is not the thing that I do best. I'm good at the radio show. I'm good at doing certain things. And I do have talent and skills in a lot of different areas. But I just have trouble explaining that to people who pay me money to do those things. So I'm always caught in that predicament. But my job is my day job is basically winding down. And perfectly honest, look, it was a nice enough job while it lasted. But the problem is that it just didn't do enough as far as money is concerned. Sorry about that. It didn't do, it was $9.63 an hour, and that really didn't cover my rent and bills, basically. So, you know, if I'm going to be not doing that, I might as well be spending my time more constructively. No, Ray Hinckley in the chat room is asking if that was Carol Kay call. No, she would not be calling in on my phone. That's a personal call. She would be calling in at the Head On Studios, Ray. You should know that by now. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be doing that. No, I don't take... When you call into the show, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who aren't familiar with how this process works, you're not calling my house, you're calling the studios in West Virginia, which is being handled by our good friend Bob Kincaid, who has, in my opinion, one of the best, if not the best, shows on the Head On Network, and because he's the founder. I'm not just saying that because he's my boss, but I really love his show. I love listening to his show. I love all of our shows here on the Head On Network. But no, I'm busy pounding the pavement, and I'm looking for work, and then mostly I'm trying to find some IT desktop support job work. My friend Phyllis Euster, who was on the show from time to time, and who, if she wasn't so crazy busy on her own, would like to be on the show a little more often talking about election reform issues, and I'm going to be talking about that later today. She's always like, Joe, you know, you can do this stuff, you can do anything and all that, but then I'm like, I get so negative, and I hate it when I get negative about myself, but that's just the way I am sometimes. And I'm not necessarily trying to knock myself down. It's just that I've suffered so many disappointments over the years, I just kind of look for that. Just like, you know, I kind of do, you know, when people talk about funding for the Head On Network, I'm just like, well, when it happens, it happens. You know? When it happens, it happens. And we hope it happens someday soon. And maybe we'll go out and maybe I'll start being an enforcer for a loan shark, break a few kneecaps, get a few thousand bucks handy, and that'll be just fine. And you know what's really sad is, and again, I point at just me, but it's not just me. The amount of money it would take to get me out of this hole is nothing. You know, a large chunk of it is the fact that I lost about a year because of my wife's illness. I was a year unemployed, and I got absolutely nothing back from that. There was no compensation. So I lost about $25,000. And basically, if someone were to hand me $20,000, between $20,000 and $25,000, and say, here you go, that would solve all of my problems. I can pay off all of my rent and all of my bills, get back on my feet, you know, and have a much more comfortable existence and a much more stress-free existence. But, of course, that money's not coming. Nobody has that kind of money to give me. Nobody I know has that kind of money to give me. But $20,000 is nothing. It's nothing. It's chicken feed. We're wasting billions of dollars a day in Iraq. There are people who make $20,000 a minute in this country. And $20,000 is nothing. But it just goes to show where we are in this country, where that amount of money would mean so much. It would, for a lot of people, $20,000 would make a huge difference in their lives. And, you know, people go out and they play the lottery and they want to hit the lottery because they want to have some more control over their lives. And this is the problem when you're poor. And when you're poor, you don't have any control over your life. And that's the situation I'm in today. And it's one of the reasons why I do this radio show. And I'm going to be talking about that also today, along with the election reform issue. There's a couple issues I want to talk about, and we're coming up on a break, not quite this moment, but after the break, I'm going to start talking about an interview I saw with Bill Moyers, with Michael J. Copps, with two P's, who was one of the chairmen of the commissioners on the Federal Communications Commission, one of the guys who's trying to protect us and save the public airwaves against overwhelming opposition, and about media consolidation and all that stuff. And it was a very, very powerful interview. And and I'm also going to talk about election reform, and I'm also going to talk about our moving slowly but surely into war with Iran. There are several sources talking about that. So we've got a bunch to talk about today. But again, I've got an open mic policy. If you want any, if there's anything else you want to talk about, you can feel free to call in. And let's go ahead and take that break. If you do want to call in, numbers are 304-658-5453, 877-443-2366. Let's take our first break, and we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you fed up with the Democrats and Republicans? Tired of the catfighting between the left and the right? You'll want to listen to America Back on Track. America Back on Track from the Quality News Network is a true alternative, a new national radio voice for people who put America before a political party and special money interests. America Back on Track is for people who want to restore the values that made our country great. Quality, integrity, purpose, compassion, humility, and strength. America Back on Track delivers the news and perspective, engaging listeners with intelligent interviews and stimulating commentary. Wouldn't you rather hear smart people talking about new directions instead of ideologues pushing their propaganda? Tune in to America Back on Track weekdays at noon Pacific right here or online at thequalitynewsnetwork.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.org.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
And we're back here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. And, got a lot to talk about. One of my favorite websites to get information from is the Sideshow, Avedon Carroll's Sideshow. Like some blogs, I tend to categorize blogs. And there are blogs that I call information warehouses. Atrios is probably the most well-known. And what Atrios does and what Avedon Carroll of the Sideshow does are basically they'll do a little editorializing from time to time, but mostly what they do is they pick a link and they say, here you go, read this, take a look at this. This is interesting bit of news. But Avedon Carroll pointed me to an interview by Bill Moyers with Michael J. Copps, of the FCC, and he was talking about the issue of media consolidation, and it was some very, very powerful stuff, and very, very scary stuff, to be perfectly honest. And it's stuff we've all known, you know. And as I've said time and time again on this show, and I tend to repeat myself a lot because there are certain things that need to be repeated. But if you want to know why the country's tarted, if you want to know why things are happening in this country, a big reason for it is the massive propaganda that goes on the right on a constant daily basis. And the reason for that is because pretty much every newspaper, radio station, television network, cable television network is owned by a grand total of about five corporations. And the heads of these corporations, their boards, are all strong conservative Republican supporters and will do everything they can to support policies and issues that are to their benefit and do not serve the public interest. And it is a very, very dangerous situation when you have such powerful communication. And look, most people get their news nowadays from television. And again, it's something that I've repeated before. For people who got their news 40, 50 years ago, back in the 40s, back in the 50s, when they got their news, for the most part, they got it from newspapers in the days before radio and television. I mean, people listened to radio, of course, but for the most part, when they got their news in depth, certainly, they got it from newspapers. And the beat reporters who were writing those columns, for the most part, made pretty much the same kind of money everybody else made. I mean, some of them got, there were obviously some star columnists back then, people who made a lot of money and people who were, but even then, they weren't making that much more than the average person was making at the time. Because it was much more of a common man attitude that everybody, you know, the wealth distribution was much, you know, squeezed together in the middle as opposed to being forced all the way up to the top, right? But nowadays, people mostly get their news from television and from radio to a certain extent, but mostly television, and the people who go on television, the people who do the news on television, make gobs more money than the average person makes. Most the anchor people, the people you see on TV, they make in the six figures at the very least. A lot of them make a lot more. And of course, you know, the network anchors make seven figures and higher, and then the punditry make seven figures or higher. And they really have very little connection, despite what they like. You know, Chris Matthews and these guys, they all try to say, well, you know, I was born a regular common man. Bull. They were not. They were never that. They came from well-off families that gave them good opportunities and good educations and gave them the ability, and they have completely and totally lost touch. David Broder is the one that most people talk about, the dean of the Washington Press Corps, who's never been anything more than a Republican hack. But he gains respect, you know, and they honestly believe that this guy is a man of the common people. And they're like, what are you, nuts? What are you, kidding me? What the hell does he understand about any issues that we have to go through every single day? What does he understand about sleeping on an air mattress because you can't afford any furniture? What does he know about that? He hasn't done anything about anything like that since maybe he was, you know, a teenager just starting out. But the media consolidation is, and again, my big pet issue, and everybody has a pet issue, especially on the left. We're all caught up with our little pet issues, and some of them are very important, but I deal with it in very practical terms. So my pet issue is election reform, because I very firmly believe that a lot of the things that we need to accomplish simply can't get accomplished if we don't have the right people in office. And we can't get the right people in office if the elections are constantly rigged. But Michael J. Copps makes a very, very powerful point when he says, whatever your issue is, if your big issue is election reform or Hurricane Katrina or anything like that, your second big issue ought to be media consolidation. Because all of these, I'm going to quote him for a second, all of these big issues get filtered and funneled through big media. That's how the people hear about it. That's what sets the parameters of the debate, and that's what maybe limits intelligent decision-making for the future of our democracy. End quote. That is a very, very powerful statement. Trust the people, one politician said. Trust the people and you know, let them make the decision. But the people can't be trusted to make the decision if they're given wrong information. And that's a serious problem. If we want to be good citizens, and being a good citizen is a very, very difficult thing. It is much easier to be a peasant than it is to be a citizen, because a peasant recognizes that they have no control over what goes on in the imperial circles, whoever's ruling their lives, and they just go on with their regular lives, and you know, their day-to-day lives are based upon, you know, the goodwill of the people who are in charge. And they understand that, and they recognize that. But as a citizen, you have to be more informed, and you have to be more active. You have to. It's a participatory type of deal. I'll say the word right. It's a participatory type of deal, and it takes a lot more work. It takes intelligence. It takes education. It takes building a society where people have that education and have that knowledge so that they can make the right decisions. And if they're being lied to on a constant level, they can't make intelligent decisions. They can't make rational decisions. And every day, every single day of the year, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all the ships at sea, every single day of the year, you have been hammered by corporate propaganda, which is all this is. And you know, it's not a national thing. I've talked about this before. It's not so much that, you know, it's pro-American, because it's not pro-American. It has nothing to do with that. It's a political hegemony, but it's a political hegemony that's not built on ideological basis. It's not really about anything more than how much money can we grab from as many people as we can, and how much can we get away with. It's a corporate assault on all nations, on the entire human race. It's a belief that the corporation is a more important entity than the individual, and that their interests are the public interest, which is not the case. What's good for General Motors is not necessarily good for the country. It's a part of that, and obviously people need to be employed and have jobs, and it's very good for, you know, very good along those lines. But the truth of the matter is, what's good for the American public should be determined by the American public. And the American public can't make those decisions properly without the right information. And I'm going to paraphrase Jefferson. Jefferson said something to the effect of, if we had a choice between living in a country with either a free government or a free press, he would choose the free press any day, because the free press is what allows people to make these decisions. But it used to be, and one of the things that Michael J. Copps talked about, is said that we used to, every 3 years, require a company to come down, any radio station, television station, they had to come down and they had to get their license renewed. And there was a checklist of things, a group of things that they looked at to determine whether or not they were acting in the public interest. And if they felt they were acting in the public interest, which they usually were, they would say, okay, you can get your license back. And there were, and I'm sure, and I don't know any specific instances, I'm sure there were some instances that say, you guys are not doing in the the public interest. And the public interest in the FCC rules and regulations and all that stuff is mentioned something like 11 times, or like in the Constitution or someplace like that. The 1934 laws, that's it. The 1934 laws that governed the use of airwaves when radio was just coming out, when, you know, before television, they used the term public interest a lot. And while that can be a fairly vague thing, but there's a general understanding that it has to do with diversity, it has to do with localization. And you don't have that when everything is owned by basically five corporations. And what's important to understand about all of this is that there's information that's out there that you can never get because of this. But nowadays, to continue on with what I was saying, but nowadays, instead of every 3 years and having to go down there and justify yourself, it's every 8 years, and basically you can send a postcard in and they'll send your license back in the mail. There's no incentive. There's no punishment for somebody who's not working in the public interest. And the corporate interest is not, like I said, necessarily the public interest. They're two different things. The free market it can be a great and wonderful thing, but the open hand of Adam Smith can very quickly turn into a closed fist that smashes anything in sight. The ideology they like to sell is that if you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. The reality of unbridled capitalism is if you try to build a better mousetrap, the Acme Mousetrap Company will smash you down so fast and so hard you won't know what hits you. That is the practical reality of it. And the only protection you have against that is to have a free government that not only makes the laws but enforces them and prevents the Acme Mousetrap Company from smashing down all opposition just so that it can maintain its profitability margin. And of course, you know, and the movie Network by Paddy Chayefsky, which is one of the most prescient movies ever made, shows very clearly, you know, how things work. I mean, I realize it's a fictional story, but my God, you know, the some of the things that he had in there, you know, and mostly about the news divisions of big networks, which are one of the things that they do that's supposed to be in the public interest and which used to be a lot more independent than they are now, suddenly they're supposed to be profit-making machines. And that's how you get Katie Couric, who is, I'm sure, a very nice person, and who does a wonderful job as kind of a nice talk show host lady for the Today Show, or one of those kind of soft fare like that. That's how you get Katie Couric as the anchor of a news show, of the network news. Every time I hear about her, I keep thinking of the old Bloom County cartoon where they get like Christine Brinkley or something like that to be head on. And Christine Brinkley is going to tell us about that big massive fire in which hundreds of people died. Hi! Oh, gross! You know, that's what I keep thinking. Hey, we got the WINS news coming up, the Workers Independent News. Let's go ahead and do that. I'm going to talk about more on this issue and about the oncoming war with Iran. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Hey, it's a Puffy AmiYumi break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. With just 2 weeks left in California's legislative session, leaders in both houses are working on a health care reform bill that would require employers to provide health insurance. The California Labor Federation's Art Pulaski.
Employers would pay 7.5% of payroll up to the maximum of Social Security taxable income, which is, what, about $96,000. And then employers would either have to provide coverage for their employees or put that money, equivalent amount of money, into a pot, whereby the state would have a large risk pool available for people who are not provided insurance directly by their employers.
Pulaski says a single-payer universal health care bill did not advance in the California legislature, but there's a real chance that this one will.
The discussions are becoming intense between the leadership and the governor in terms of how we negotiate this bill out, and so I expect that we're going to see some more significant progress over the next week.
New York City's sea of yellow cabs could come to a halt next week. Jesse Russell reports.
The 48-hour strike will happen on September 5th and 6th if the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission move forward with plans to install GPS tracking technology in all taxis. More than 10,000 cabbies make up the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, who announced the plans to move forward with the strike on August 23rd. During that press conference, Alliance spokesperson Bill Lindauer said taxi drivers are upset they have to pay for the GPS, which will track their every movement. As independent contractors, the taxi drivers consider it a violation of their privacy.
200 employees for Australian auto parts maker Venture returned to work on Wednesday, giving relief to Ford Motor Company, who had to stand down 1,800 workers without pay as that strike continued. Venture is moving the jobs from Melbourne and, according to union representatives, has reneged on an agreement to pay more than $25 million in entitlements. The employees returned to work after they lost legal protections. Ford had been asking the Australian government to become involved in the Venture dispute so Ford workers could return to the production lines. Venture has been given 1 week to settle the dispute. In a major blow to former Senator John Edwards, the International Association of Machinists endorsed Senator Hillary Clinton for president on Thursday. Edwards had expected to pick up the labor endorsement from the 700,000-strong industrial trade union. According to IAM President Tom Buffenbarger, the union chose Clinton because she is the only candidate of either party, he says, to come forward with a comprehensive manufacturing policy. The machinists also endorsed Republican candidate, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K, and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
Back here in the Cup of Joe radio show, last half hour of the show. Man, the time flies when I do the show sometimes. Night Sounds, by the way, is a great show. I really, really love Billy Shears, and I love that wonderful, wonderful English accent from her. She is really, really beautiful. Billy Shears, that's not Billy Shears, obviously. But I'm really glad that we have him on the Head On Radio Network. He's been around for a long time, and he's really good. He's got a great voice, and he's got great taste in music. You know, and that's just the thing. You know, it's not just that talk radio is bad, and media consolidation makes talk radio bad and politicizes. But the fact of the matter is, it makes all radio bad. In the interview that I had. That I had mentioned with Bill Moyers, and just go to pbs.org and do a search for Bill Moyers, Michael J. Copps,
interview, and you can watch the whole interview. It's about 20 minutes long. It's very fascinating, very powerful stuff. And one of the problems is that, and they showed a clip in the interview of one of the town hall meetings that they had about this issue. And of course, one of the scary things was the fact that I don't know if it was that particular meeting, but there was a meeting that was being held, and they weren't expecting a lot of people to show up, and a lot of people showed up. And Michael J. Copps asked, "Where did you guys hear about this meeting?" Because it really wasn't, you know, very well publicized. And they said the BBC. So it just goes to show, you know, how bad things are, that people are getting information about American FCC on the British Broadcasting Company, right? But the thing is, what I wanted to say, if I can get back on my train of thought, because I ramble like that, is that they asked the people at this town hall meeting, is radio better or worse than it was 10 years ago? And people just said, no, it's worse. It's worse. People know it's worse. And it's not just talk radio. Listen to any kind of radio station these days playing music. And I deal with this at work, okay? Now, top 40 radio has been the same. And I joke about it at work because when I was at my last job, where there was always listening to rap music. And not only were they always listening to rap music, they were listening to a top 40 rap, which is basically playing the same six rap songs. And I would get frustrated because it's very annoying to me to try to work, to try to concentrate on my job when I'm hearing the same songs over and over again. I mean, I don't even like to listen to songs that I like over and over again like that. You know, and I would joke about it. You know, I'd make a joke rap song. You know, I'd just start singing, "This is what I just said. This is what I just said. This is what I just said. I just said, whoa," because you got to have the whoa. And then all these damn songs have that now. But top 40 radio hasn't changed in 50 years, okay? But even on the oldie stations, we had another person there listen to an oldie station, and that's fine, and that's all well and good. It's the music that I grew up with, so I like it. But the problem is they still have a very limited playlist. And it used to be, years ago, that radio stations were much more independent. For those of you who are old enough to remember the television show WKRP in Cincinnati, which is one of the best TV shows there ever, ever was, it was about one of those old radio stations. And the station in the TV show, for those who have never seen the show, was a little station in Cincinnati, WKRP. And they're switched from the kind of Muzak station to a rock station. And the DJs had total control of what got played on the air. And the station manager supported that. Even though he tried to beg the guy to play some top 40 music, Johnny Fever, who was their main DJ, their morning guy, the drive morning guy, which is the most important slot in radio, I believe, because that's what people listen to in their cars, you know, he said, "Johnny, please play something in the top 40. And I was like, "No, I'm not playing." You know, and he would play, you know, Pink Floyd and you know, the great classic rock, what we call classic rock now. But the DJs had a lot more control over that. And those stations, you know, during the 70s and then during the 80s were slowly starting to go away. And it was all because that was when the media consolidation began under, of course, our good conservative friend Ronald Reagan, who, of course, made a lot of money off of it. He and his friends made a lot of money off, because that's really all they care about, you know. Human lives, human lives are cheap. Money, that's the important thing, right? And leading up to what I want to talk about next, because this is also very important, and it's about why we have a government that's not accountable. There are several sources, there are several websites in the last couple of days talking about insider reports that they have heard that the plans have already been laid and the schedule is being set out for us to bomb and attack Iran. Now, Robert Perry of Consortium News talks about this being a turning point in this country. Actually, there are a lot of different turning points. Paul Krugman in his article today talked about Katrina being a turning point. And actually, let me read a little bit from that, because that really also goes to the same issue that I'm talking about. Krugman writes, "There's a powerful political faction in this country that's determined to draw exactly the wrong issues from the Katrina debacle." And by the way, it's a 2-year anniversary of Katrina. "Namely, that the government always fails when it attempts to help people in need, so it shouldn't even try. Now, Mitt Romney said, I don't want the people who ran the Katrina cleanup to manage our health care system. But, you know, if he says that as if the Bush administration's practice of appointing incompetent cronies to key positions and refusing to hold them accountable, no matter how badly they perform, and by the way, Michael Chertoff still has his job, is that, that you saying that as if that's the way government actually works, which is not. And Paul Krugman is right. I'm not sure that faction is losing that argument. The thing about conservative governance is that it can succeed by failing. When conservative politicians messed up, they foster a cynicism about government that may actually help their cause. And because they control the media, for the most part, because those five corporations are heavily conservative, the heads of those corporations, no matter how liberal the reporters may be, it doesn't really matter, because their jobs are determined on what the editors tell them to write and what their bosses tell them to write and what their bosses tell them to say. And when their livelihood is on the line like that, you can bet they're going to listen, especially when they're making so much money and they don't want to be in a situation like me, living in an air mattress in an unfurnished room, doing an internet radio show, perhaps, if you get my drift. But Krugman asks if Krugman says that future historians will see Katrina as a turning point. But there are other turning points. I personally think the turning point was the election of 2000. I think when we put into office George W. Bush instead of Al Gore, I think that was the turning point for America. That was when we officially went from republic to empire. But Robert Parry of Consortium News talks about the looming war with Iran as being that actual turning point. And you can say that the 2000 selection led up to it, but the actual turning point will be if we actually go into war with Iran. And it looks like that there's nothing that's going to stop it. I mean, Bush, they're pulling out the same advertising campaign that they pulled out for Iraq. Bush has been using the terms nuclear holocaust when it comes to Iran, and of course he'll deny it later that you know, blah, blah, blah. And again, the Iranians, whether they like us or not, and I'm sure that there's a lot of people in the government of Iran who don't like us, who call us the Great Satan and all that stuff. And, you know, they're a religious theocracy, which is not pleasant, regardless of what religion you have. The truth of the matter is that the Iranian people, you know, they have nothing against us, and they're no threat to us. All this is about, once again, is just pure greed. And the doing something simply because they have the power to do it. And it's going to be bad for this country, and it's going to be bad for the world when this happens. And it's going to lay the groundwork for the destruction of the United States, basically. And you know what? To a certain extent, I welcome that, because I think we can become a better nation if we realize that we don't have the right to be global, to be globally dominant. Just because we have all the nukes doesn't give us the moral authority to rule over other people's lives. And I think we finally got to get to a point where no single nation has that power, whether it be the United States or Russia or Iran or Iraq or any country, that we have to start thinking about a community of human beings. I want to talk more about this. Let's take our last break, and we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I've been waiting for the old John Conyers to reappear, and there he was on Tuesday at a town hall meeting in Detroit. the head of the House Judiciary Committee, finally declared his independence from Speaker Nancy Pelosi on the urgent question of impeachment. Said Conyers, Nancy Pelosi has impeachment off the table, but that's off her table. It's not off John Conyers' table. That's a relief, since I thought Pelosi had permanently gagged Conyers on the subject. Not anymore. Nancy Pelosi, he said, cannot prevent me from introducing an impeachment resolution. He added, I want you to know that I have no reticence, no reluctance, no hesitation to use the tool of impeachment whenever I feel it's appropriate. So what's his hesitation right now? When is a more appropriate time than now, after all the crimes Bush and Cheney have already committed? When is a more appropriate time than now, just as they're about to commit another heinous one by illegally attacking Iran? The old John Conyers this week put his toes back in the impeachment pool. It's time now for him to dive right in. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs named their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed Lesbian Bible Study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
All right, let's dance. Last 10 minutes or so of the show. Peter Godbold will be back live tonight, by the way, for Strictly Confidential. What a great show. What a great addition to the Head On Radio Network. You can join Pete here in the Head On Radio Network chat room. He just dropped in to say hello. He's been ill, but he's back. And he's back live tonight, and we're glad to have him. He's a great, like I said, just, you know, we have such a wonderful group of people on the Head On Radio Network. John Fox from Australia, Guy James, Dr. Bill O'Brien, of course, Bob Kincaid. So many people, so many great hosts. The Head On Radio Network has so much to offer. And we are the answer to media consolidation. We are using the one technology that may be the saving grace of the human race. Truly. Because it's something that not only informs, but it helps people communicate. One of the most important technological advancements in history was the printing press. Because the printing press allowed much more books to get into circulation, which allowed a lot more people to have knowledge. Prior to those days, if you wanted to have a book copied, somebody had to literally write and make a hand-drawn copy of it, handwritten copy of it. And obviously it was a very expensive and time-consuming process to do, because somebody had to sit there and actually do it. But with the printing press, all that changed. And in fact, one of the documentaries I saw about the early Catholic Church, which was interesting to me, and I didn't even realize it, was that they wouldn't even let people read their own Bibles. The Catholic Church saying, we'll read it and we'll interpret it for you. But people wanted to read the Bibles. They wanted to know more. And, me, I'm not big on organized religion, but, to me, that's a basic right. You know, if you want to know about your religion, this is the book, right? This is the book that everything's based on. You should be able to read it. But the Catholic Church for years said, no, can't read it. And that's media consolidation. But then the printing press came out and a lot more people started reading and thinking and talking.
And that's how you got the Enlightenment. And the Enlightenment is the basis upon everything that we believe here in this country, about our individual rights, our freedoms, about the role of government. It's all based on Enlightenment principles. And, of course, the corporations and the religious entities that they have allied themselves with, they are against the Enlightenment, and they're doing everything they can to destroy it. And they want to go back to the old, just basically exploit people days, which, you know, still went on, even under the best of conditions, still went on in certain parts of the world. We have to think bigger if we want to overcome these problems, because, you know, some of the things that we overcame in this country, we only used to overcome in this country. We have to start thinking about overcoming them all over the world, ladies and gentlemen. And when I talk about issues that politicians have to stand for, this is a biggie for me, because we're reaching the point with technology where it really is a small world, where communication is instantaneous, and you have a tool such as the Internet, which is the most wonderful, fantastic tool there is. It's the only tool where a guy like me, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all the ships at sea, where a guy like me can get on the air and talk to people and have people talk back to me without having a huge transmitter, without having to go through a huge screening process. Well, that can be a good or a bad thing, obviously, but what I'm saying is, if I had to take the time to go through the usual stuff, it would take me years to get on the air. But it's not just that. It's people writing blogs that have had an effect on our politics. It's people going out and going in the chat rooms and communicating with one another. The printing press was wonderful, but if you wanted to write something, you still had to own a press, and that was expensive. Owning a computer, owning the equipment you need to put together even a show like this is relatively inexpensive. You can do a radio show like this, ladies and gentlemen, for under $400 very easily, very easily. And the bulk of that will be on the computer, right? Even if you're starting from scratch, if you're buying the computer, if you have to buy the computer, you're talking about less than $500. You get yourself a Eurorack mixer that costs about $80. You get yourself a nice microphone. The one I have cost $125, and I didn't pay for it. It was donated to me by one of my listeners, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful for all the help I can get, of course, in my current financial situation. But the point is, it's the most accessible thing. And even so, if you just want to write stuff, you don't even have to own a computer. It costs you nothing. You can go to the library if you live in a place that has a close public library. Just go on there. Even if they only let you on for a couple hours a day, it's still time you can read news, time you can talk to people, post messages, and have your opinion be known to however many people. If the world is going to be saved, this is the tool that's going to do it. It's already made an effect in this country, a small effect. Because you still have the corporate power. I mean, the top, as Michael J. Copps in the interview with Bill Moritz said, that the top news websites are still corporate owned, but that doesn't mean that they control everything. And of course, they're working very hard to limit the control. Well, that the net neutrality stuff is very, very important. And yes, Bob Kincaid, the conservatives do hate public libraries. They hate anybody getting anything for free. They hate anybody having any fun. To the conservatives in this country, from the beginning, it's never been about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's about the pursuit of profit. And you can turn that into any big issue. Like I mentioned yesterday on the show, the gun control issue. It's not about the right to bear arms. It's about the right to sell them. And, you know, and I've been thinking about this, and I haven't said it yet, but let me say it now. You know, the problem is when you have these big corporations is that they're not even interested in doing what they do, because what they do is just a sideline for something else. For example, McDonald's is not a corporation that wants to just make cheap food served quickly to people. They're not interested in that. They're interested in global domination. Selling cheap burgers is a way of doing that. The Coca-Cola company, it doesn't want to make money by selling a tasty soft drink to people. The Coca-Cola company wants to rule the world. That's their problem.
And that's the issues we have to deal with. And it's up to us as citizens, and the only way we can do that as citizens is by working together. It's up to us to try to prevent that, to try to keep them in their place, to say, no, you are a soft drink company. Your job is to make money selling pleasantly flavored soft drinks. And in the real free marketplace, if somebody comes up with a tastier one, then we'll buy that one instead. But they don't want a free market. They want to dominate the market. They want to wipe out all competition. They want to be the Acme mousetrap company that slams down anybody that does innovative ideas. It's really, to a certain extent, it's not that much different from communism, to be perfectly honest. Because that's, just as communism drove down innovation, big corporations drive down innovation. That's why radio sucks. Because they're not interested in innovation. They're not interested in just localizing and letting people, play it on. And that's why internet radio was so great. And I'm not just talking about talk shows like my show or the Head On Network. I'm talking about internet music radio stations. That's why they're great, because people are playing what they want to hear. That's why it's great for rock groups. That's why peer-to-peer, all this supposedly free stuff that the Record Administration, the biggest, fascist, nastiest organizations that's out there that want to sue old ladies because their grandkids were downloading a couple of free songs on their computer. That's why they hate that. And they don't even understand, they don't even recognize that it's bad business for them to clamp that down. Did you know that during the height of Napster, when Napster was going strong and all the peer-to-peer was running like that, that CD sales went up? And they went up because people got the opportunity to hear songs, and people want to be loyal. People want to say, hey, I like this, I'm going to go out and buy the CD and support this artist. People want to do that. But there's two things that's preventing them. One is that those people don't get the exposure that they need in order to get that audience. And two, people just aren't earning enough money, which is another sort of thing. When you're charging $17, $18 for a CD, which is ridiculous, when you can get a DVD for $10, for $2, you can get a DVD. And you're selling CDs still for $18, $19, screw that noise. And that's where we stand. And I would continue, but we have to break off the show here. That's okay. Every now and then when I get on a good rant going, it's all right. Hey, the Cup of Joe radio show has been produced by the Head On Radio Network. Our good friend Bob Kincaid running the show from the studios in West Virginia. We are sponsored by UnreportedNews.net. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news. If you missed the show, you can always listen in on the White Rose Society. My archives are there, WhiteRoseSociety.org. America back on track. Heat and close on all of your radio network. Have a good weekend. Until Monday, all of you out there, hey, let's get back to work.
I want a cup of Joe. I'll crave a plate of Dave. Oh, and a jar of Joe. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll dip a mug of Doug with the creamer of steam.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
CBS News, I'm Tom Foti. A decision expected soon from Idaho Senator Larry Craig. CBS News learns Senator Craig will have an announcement regarding his future plans tomorrow in Boise, Idaho. Jonathan Martin with Politico.com.
When you have the lurid, explicit details from the bathroom incident at the airport in Minnesota, combined with rumors and allegations over decades, is likely going to push him to end his career tomorrow.
Well, after 29 years in the Senate, Virginia Senior Senator John Warner has decided not to run again.
In his nearly 30 years in the Senate, John Warner, who's the ranking member of the Armed Services Committee, has become one of the most authoritative voices in Congress on the military. The former Navy Secretary and Marine veteran urged others to devote time to public service.
I added up a total of 45 years in which I've been privileged to be a public servant.
Warner, who is 80, has earned respect for members of both parties. Virginia's junior senator, Democrat Jim Webb, put it simply.
John Warner is the quintessential Virginia gentleman.
The challenge for Republicans will be keeping Warner's seat in the party. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
Also calling it quits in the next couple of weeks, White House Press Secretary Tony Snow.
I can try to work up some book proposals, probably first and foremost on issues of how you deal with sickness.
Snow himself is dealing with a battle against cancer. This late word from Durham, North Carolina, new legal trouble for the former prosecutor in the Duke lacrosse case, which ended up being thrown out. Here's CBS's Jim Crisula.
A judge has decided that former prosecutor Mike Nifong lied to him about crucial DNA evidence in the Duke lacrosse rape case. Testifying in his own defense, Nifong said while he may have made misstatements, it was not intentional. The judge did not buy that. Nifong faces up to 30 days in jail and a $500 fine.
Ticket sales fast and furious for tonight's $330 million Mega Million lottery drawing. Lots of optimism.
Spend and spend and spend. Pay off my bills, help my family, and donate some to charity.
I would help everybody, but that's how I am. I'm serious. That's the kind of person I am.
Charity, I have a family. Spread it around.
The odds for those folks, one in 176 million. President Bush speaks out on the credit pinch.
If your family is one of those having trouble making the monthly payments, this problem doesn't seem modest at all.
And he announced several proposals to deal with an alarming rise in mortgage defaults. Lizanne Saunders is chief investment strategist with Charles Schwab and Company.
We still have the employment effect largely in front of us. We're starting to see it now, certainly with many of the mortgage companies shutting their doors. Some of the other bigger banks that have mortgage divisions, shutting down those divisions, laying off people.
Wall Street apparently liked what it heard from the president. The results, markets up. Dow Jones Industrials up 119 points. Standard & Poor's 500 up 16 and a third. The NASDAQ up 31 points. This is CBS News.
You've got to check this out. The amazing Labor Day Serta mattress event is going on this Thursday through Monday at Sam's Club. Experience super Serta savings on all mattresses all weekend long and only at Sam's Club. See details in Thursday's newspaper or go to samsclub.com. You'll save money and sleep easier.
Try a Serta mattress with a comfort test demonstration at Sam's Club, Saturday through Monday only.
Can you guess which state Michelin Man is in? Having left Utah, he's on the aptly named Loneliest Road. He'll drive vast distances without anything in sight, including a gas pump. That's why he has Michelin Hydro-Edge tires. As the longest-lasting, most fuel-efficient tires in their category, they're just right for lonely roads and high gas prices. For more on Hydro-Edge tires and to see which state Michelin Man is in, visit michelinman.com/guesswhere.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Category defined as premium-priced S&T passenger products.
It's a case that does not involve terrorism, but two college students are charged with carrying explosives over state lines.
The pair were picked up for speeding August 4th in Berkeley County, South Carolina. Investigators say they immediately aroused suspicions with their evasiveness. Sheriff Wayne DeWitt says deputies saw live ammunition on the floor of their car, and later...
In the trunk of the car, the deputy observed what he thought to be pipe bombs.
Although both men face explosives charges, a federal official tells CBS News this is not a terrorism case, and that word does not appear in the indictment. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Well, San Diego border crossing is pretty busy under most circumstances. Today there was a majorly traffic jam on the Mexican side because of a labor demonstration. Members of a teachers' union sat down in the northbound lanes just a few hundred yards south of the crossing point. They're against changes in Mexico's pension system. Gay Brewer has died. He was a big star on the pro golf tour in the 1960s. He was 75 years old. I'm Tom Foti, CBS News.
It's your walls and your ideas, your kitchen and your creativity, your garage and your vision. It's your home, from the small jobs that renew to more ambitious ideas that transform. At Ace Hardware, we're here to help you.
Come to your neighborhood Ace and start your project now for paint, plumbing, home organization, serious hardware, and great gadgets, plus a team of Ace folks to help you get just what you need to make your home beautiful.
Ace is your place, with everything for your home, plus expert advice and solutions that work for you. Ace, the helpful place.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. That's peace of mind. Now get 3.9% APR on select Ford or Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. That's just 3.9%. Not all buyers qualify for Ford credit financing. Offer ends 9/30/07. See dealer for limited warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
We're going to spend this hour with journalist Robert Parry, the guy who helped break the Iran-Contra story in the 1980s, and he's been digging for dirt ever since.
This land is your land. This land is my land.
Robert Perry writes at consortiumnews.com, which is a nonprofit, and I invite you to support it if you have the means to do so, because he does a lot of great work, and from what I can tell, the budgets are not robust there at the consortiumnews.com news desk. Bob Perry, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Peter.
Nice to talk with you again. And from the website, I see that you have a new book. Is Neck Deep out yet?
Yes, it's available on the Internet. We haven't yet released it to, or has not been released yet to the bookstores, but it is available both through the publisher's website at neckdeepbook.com and through amazon.com. And if people buy it through the publisher's website, then $5 for each purchase gets rebated to our keep our website going.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, could I ask your people to send my people a copy of the book? Because
sure.
Next time we have you on, we'll go in depth on that.
I'd love to.
Yeah. The full title is Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. And I want to catch up on a couple of recent posts of yours, Bob. And why don't I let you choose the order? There's one that went up just today about, it's called If Democrats Want to Lose. And the other that I think is really powerful is the one about Donald Rumsfeld's resignation.
Sure. I think both of them are, they kind of interconnect somewhat. The piece on Donald Rumsfeld's resignation is, I think, an interesting tale about the perceptions of what happened around the election in November of 2006. It was generally believed at that time that when the Democrats won on November 7th, and the next day George W. Bush announced the ouster of his defense secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, and the appointment of Robert Gates, the former CIA director, that Bush was making a major concession to the Democrats and to the and to Republicans, or the so-called realists, his father's group. Newsweek even had a cover showing a large George H.W. Bush in the foreground and George W. Bush kind of as a little kid. So that was the perception at the time. It turned out to be entirely false. The reality was, as we now know, that on November 6th, the day before the election, Donald Rumsfeld had submitted a memo which had called for de-escalating the war in Iraq. He simultaneously, or the same day anyway, we now know, submitted his letter of resignation. So, and even before that, the weekend before, November 6th would have been a Tuesday, the weekend before, George Bush had called Robert Gates to his ranch and basically laid out for him the possibility of becoming defense secretary and sounding out Gates if he would essentially buy into the neoconservative vision for the Middle East, which Bush at least felt Gates was amenable to. So what we had was really, the story really was that Rumsfeld was going wobbly on the war, and Bush got rid of him and put in someone fresh who he thought could at least promote the continuation and even the escalation of the war. So while the Democrats and some of the realist Republicans were sitting around thinking that Bush was making major concessions, he was actually preparing to take them on frontally and not just nix this idea of de-escalating, but actually begin escalating, which he did with the surge. So the Democrats were sort of living with wishful thinking. And even when some of this has sort of come out, the Rumsfeld memo came out in December, and even before, it was before the Gates hearings, but the Democrats did not make an issue out of it.
Yeah.
They basically, I think, were still so happy that Rumsfeld had left that they just did not want to make a big deal of it. And then subsequently, you had it was only a week or so ago that the resignation letter was flushed out by Reuters and other news agencies. And it showed, to people's surprise, that instead of the November 8th resignation that people had thought, it was actually November 6th. So you have here a whole story, a whole narrative of how this developed, where the American people, and because if they listened to the mainstream press, would have had it completely wrong.
Yeah. Let's go into a couple of details here. First of all, you published in your article that people can find at consortiumnews.com a quote from the Rumsfeld memo of November 6th. Clearly, what U.S. forces are currently doing in Iraq is not working well enough or fast enough, and he was seeking consideration of an accelerated drawdown of U.S. bases from 55 to 10 or 15 by April of this year and to 5 by July of this year. So if Rumsfeld's plan had been put into effect, we'd be much further along in withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq than any of the Democratic plans that have been offered as part of the debate over the supplemental and the surge that occurred this spring.
Right. Rumsfeld was basically moving in line with Congressman Murtha, who had been recommending for some time this refocusing of the war effort, essentially having some Americans left behind as a strike force against Al-Qaeda or for important security missions, but essentially removing the American troops from a combat role. And that's where that was the direction that Rumsfeld was headed. It was not the direction that George Bush wanted to take, or presumably Dick Cheney. So Rumsfeld, rather than being one of the guys being tossed over the side because he was a war proponent, he was actually tossed over the side because he'd become a war skeptic.
That's remarkable. And the fact that the Democrats didn't really see the significance of this as they were busy kissing up to Bob Gates and rolling over for his appointment, I never expected them to stop it. But I would love to have seen more aggressive questioning and more negative votes on his nomination, if only to lay out that marker that, you know, he didn't have the unqualified support of the Democratic caucus in the Senate.
Right. He was praised for his candor by Hillary Clinton and others on the Senate Armed Services Committee. So what the American people did not get was either a full accounting of how that resignation of Rumsfeld had occurred and what the appointment of Gates really meant, nor did the Democrats go into Gates' history, which we tried to do in some of our pieces back at that time. We did a series of stories about the real Bob Gates, and I was even able to get some former CIA officers who knew him personally, knew him well, to write about their personal knowledge of how he ran the CIA and what his role was there. He was essentially a classic apple polisher who did what his superiors wanted. In the case of Bill Casey, who was sort of his mentor as he rose rapidly through the CIA in the 1980s, Casey wanted a super hardliner, so Gates took over the intelligence division, the side that does the analysis, and essentially began the process of politicizing the analytical division of CIA, which by the time you get to the end of the 80s is a very advanced problem, and it never gets corrected. And then under Tenet, who's a similar style guy who knows basically who's apple to polish, he furthered that in leading the country into the prelude to the Iraq invasion.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we'll come back to Rumsfeld after the break, but let's stay with the CIA for a minute here and the Gates legacy there. We now have a report that was buried for over 2 years from the CIA Inspector General about the failures at the agency in dealing with the evidence and the tip-offs that they got prior to 9/11. And, of course, George Tenet, with his Medal of Freedom and his fat book deal money in the bank, is blustering that, this isn't fair and it's not accurate. And even the report didn't really point fingers. It said there was no criminal behavior and there's no silver bullet that would have prevented it. But when you read between the lines, it's a pretty scathing indictment of the failures of the agency and our intelligence community at large in the 9/11 attacks.
Right. It's clear that not only did the CIA fail, but the FBI failed, at least at higher levels in Washington, and the Bush administration failed. And to some degree, you could put some of the blame back on the Clinton people, too, although I think a lot of what Clinton's problem was when he came in 1993, he did not understand the need to really revitalize the CIA in the best sense of the word. That is, that he did not want to really go back in and appoint people who would have demanded honest analysis. Because part of the CIA, there are two parts of it, obviously. There's the operations side, which does the spying and the paramilitary stuff, which gets them often in trouble. But there's also the analytical side, which is supposed to be there providing honest information for the government, so the government can make wise decisions. Clinton never seemed to care that much. He put James Woolsey in charge at the beginning, who turned out to be a failure as a CIA director. He never really put the focus on it that he should have. And eventually, George Tenet becomes CIA director in the latter part of the Clinton years. And Tenet was just he was a congressional staffer who always did what his superiors wanted. And his chief mentor was Senator David Boren, a very conservative or center-right Democrat, who also didn't want to ever get in much trouble. So he had this sort of go-along, get-along approach, and he took that into the Bush years. And he also had done a lot to make the Bushes happy. He had attended and renamed the CIA headquarters after George H.W. Bush, because Bush had been a former CIA director. But it was an extraordinary step to take at a time when Bush's son was trying to be president. And so you have this guy who was just constantly ingratiating himself, running the agency. And when Bush Jr. came in, and they were, and essentially his people were downplaying the Al Qaeda threat, focusing on other issues, that was when the various pieces were not put together. The agency failed, the FBI hierarchy failed, a lot of people failed.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Perry. Visit his website at consortiumnews.com. Our lines are open if you'd like to talk with him. There's a caller. We'll get to you right after the break. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number, 888-573-8372. You can also drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com.
If you like people who talk Spanish, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Cornucopia Natural Foods Carmel, Carmel Valley Market, and Staff of Life and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale, reminding you to listen in every Saturday for my show, 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays 4 to 5 p.m., honest talk about addictions and how recovery is possible. 12-Step Talk Uncensored. With addictions now the number one fastest rising disease in America, I mean all addictions, sex, food, gambling, alcohol, shopping, we are all affected. So listen in and call in. Saturdays 4 to 5 with me, Sheila Gale, brought to you by Sun Street Centers, prevention and recovery centers serving the Monterey Peninsula for over 30 years.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better, wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 23 minutes after the hour. Lines open if you'd like to talk with me and our guest, Robert Perry. Our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And this morning I got an email with a commentary piece written by a guy named Brent Badowski, and promptly called Brent, who's been on the show before, and invited him to come on the program. He'll be with us next hour for a few minutes to describe his piece called Many Democrats Wrong on Iraq Again. And then I went to consortiumnews.com to gear up for our conversation here with Robert Perry. And the number two item there is this piece by Brent Badowski. Great minds do think alike, even miles apart, Bob.
Well, I was talking to Brent earlier today, and he asked if I would post his piece. And it was a good piece. It was it meshes some with the piece that I did today also about if the Democrats want to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Because it looks at how the Democrats are now approaching the Iraq war situation without the kind of clear-headed judgment. They're doing very much what they did back in 2002. And my piece looks also at how the Washington insider community is behaving very similarly to how it behaved in 2002, buying into some of the happy false hope that's being put out by the administration and by some in the military, and repeated by some of the same pundits who were all for the war in 2002. And so we're seeing kind of a replay, which is which the Democrats again seem to be buying into, at least in enough numbers to guarantee the war continuing.
Well, and it's very interesting because one of the citations, I'm scrolling down here, I'm pretty sure it's in your article, is Congressman Jerry McNerney, freshman from California. Yeah, here it is. You referenced it. Robert Scheer, who was on right before you today, Bob, he dinged McNerney for the same quote, and it's all over the blogosphere. So we've invited the congressman to come on our program later this week and explain himself. But he took a short trip, less than a week in Iraq, and came back and saying, you quote him, "We should sit down with Republicans, see what would be acceptable to them to end the war, and present it to the president. Start negotiating from the beginning." Now, this just indicates that he appears to have been drinking from some very special Kool-Aid.
Well, you remember the line from former Michigan Governor George Romney when he was actually, it was interesting, I went back and looked at the history of this. Romney was turning against the Vietnam War in 1967 and described how in 1965 he had been taken on one of these dog and pony show trips through Vietnam arranged by the military, and came back with his glowing view of it back in 65. And in 67 he explained that by saying he'd been brainwashed. And of course the brainwash quote was used very effectively against him and essentially destroyed his candidacy for the Republican nomination for 68. But what Romney was really saying was something that is true, that when you're taken on these kinds of trips, you're given a very selective body of information. Plus, there's just the camaraderie of these trips, the excitement, and you're sort of in this sort of fold, very much like what happened to the embedded reporters during the invasion phase. They bonded with the people they were with, and that's sort of an understandable human reaction. But it often leads to some very bad professional judgments.
Mm-hmm.
The situation in Iraq, while you can always find silver linings in a cloud, is not that much different than it was before. And if one just looks back over the past several years, there have been so many turning points. There have been so many oases, or that turned out to be mirages, where people will point and say, "Oh, this the capture of Saddam, that will turn this around. The killing of Zarqawi will turn this around. The passage of a constitution will turn this around. The election with the purple fingers will turn this around." And each time it turns it turns out that the American public keeps stumbling deeper and deeper into this this desert
and Bob,
and never finding the oasis.
You had a very interesting take on the comments from Carl Levin and John Warner. I did a rant about that yesterday because while I agree with the premise that the Maliki government is a failure, to have American officials suggest that the Iraqis should dump him in the middle of a term is quite remarkable. And as you point out in your piece, what Levin is doing is buying time for George W. Bush, because if they do replace Maliki, then we all have to sit back and give him a chance, the next person a chance.
Right. It's just, it's really painting the Democrats into a corner. And Levin has been one of the real problems for those who wanted to get the U.S. out of Iraq. He is chairman of the Armed Services Committee in the Senate. And he did vote against giving the president war authorization in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
However, since then, he has taken positions that essentially raised the white flag.
Right. Robert, we'll take a break and return and pick up there. Robert Perry with me on the Peter B. Collins Show.
There's a set going strong, a lot of things going on. The man of the Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B's America.
We continue our conversation this hour with journalist Robert Parry. He writes at consortiumnews.com. We overpronounce that a little bit to help you spell it. Consortium, you know that word. And he's got a new book on the way, Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. You can order it from Amazon, and if you do, $5 will go to support the work there at consortiumnews.com. And, Bob, I had to cut off your comments there because some of these breaks I can delay and some come on like a train wreck, and that was one of those.
That's all right.
But you were talking about Carl Levin, the senator from Michigan, chair of the Armed Services Committee. And as you pointed out, he did vote against the original authorization for the invasion of Iraq. But he has operated in ways that are so senatorial, so, you know, subtle and muted and often deferential to the other side. It's been very frustrating. And these recent comments about dumping the Maliki government, again, while they may have some merit based on the failures of this government, he's our puppet. We installed him. And now for the U.S. to further direct Iraq on how it should conduct its internal affairs, it even offended George W. Bush's sense of their autonomy.
Well, Bush also has made pretty clear, though, and I think some of his people around him, that they're ready for Maliki to be replaced, even though Bush did have some words of praise for Maliki today. But I think the key point would be if Maliki is removed, whether it's a Diem-style violent coup, as we saw in Vietnam in 63, or whether it's a more friendly approach, providing a nice, comfortable exile, maybe in the south of France, as we've done for other leaders who've outlived their usefulness. Either way, if there's a new leadership, Levin has sort of painted the Democrats into a corner of saying, well, we did what you wanted, and now you have to give us a year or so for this new government to work. So instead of moving the administration toward an exit, Levin actually has created an opportunity for them to at least get another 6 months, year, 2 years of a war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing how the Democrats can, they seemed a little promising earlier this year when they took on the surge via the funding for the supplemental request. And I gave Pelosi and Reid some credit at the time for playing a weak hand as strongly as they could. But we do see how often their efforts to unify the Democrats are undercut by these somewhat independent moves by individuals. We cited Congressman McNerney a moment ago, and Levin, of course, carries a great deal more weight than a freshman like McNerney. But these present real problems for Reid and Pelosi in trying to come up with a unified Democratic position.
Well, the Democrats in the spring did start off, and when they attached a timetable to the appropriations bill, that gave them real clout, and they actually passed that. If you remember, it went to Bush, and he vetoed it. But then, instead of facing Bush down and either offering him only short-term renewals or demanding that he actually make some kind of real compromise, they announced, and Levin was one of those who announced, that if Bush didn't bend, the Democrats would crumble, and they would give him a blank check at the end of the day. And when you start off your negotiations telling someone, you know, if you don't bend, I'll do whatever you want, they're not likely to bend. So Bush stayed firm, demanded a blank check, and got one.
Well,
that was one of the first things that truly offended, I think, much of the Democratic base.
And the Democrats got caught up in the language of the White House, which effectively propagandized around, quote-unquote, supporting the troops. And
right.
So the Democrats said, well, we will never cut off money to support the troops. And that was another serious mistake, A, to take the framing and language of the White House, and B, to make a pledge like that, because they ultimately will be forced, if they are serious about confronting the president and forcing him to withdraw from Iraq, they will have to take that step, the power of the purse,
right,
and cut off the funding.
The Democrats have also been disingenuous when they say they need 60 votes or to beat a Republican filibuster, or 67 votes to override a veto. What they really need is 41 votes if they wanted to be really tough. I mean, if Bush needs the money, if he needs an appropriation bill to pass, if he's going to refuse to sign one, the Democrats could arguably refuse to let one pass by filibustering. So you could have a standoff with those kinds of numbers. So the Democrats really don't need to affirmatively pass something that gives Bush another blank check.
Mm-hmm.
If he wants another blank check, he really has to get it from them, and they could block it.
Well, and
hear this 60 vote number or 67 vote number thrown around, it's not really accurate.
And I think I've discussed this with you before, Bob. It's fundamental civics that appropriation bills originate in the House. And if the House offers $10 billion when the president asks for $100 billion, certainly negotiations can occur in the conference committee with the Senate, but you can't get $100 million if the House starts with $100 billion if the House starts with a $10 billion number.
And the Democrats, by having control of both houses, do control the calendar. The calendar is one of the most important things, and it was the one perhaps really significant achievement by gaining control of Congress last November. But instead of controlling the calendar, they've essentially let the Republicans dominate the calendar. We saw this again right before the August recess when Bush and the Republicans essentially boxed the Democrats into passing this sweeping eavesdropping bill.
That's the NSA amnesty bill, Bob.
Essentially, it was an amnesty bill. It provides,
yeah.
it legalized what Bush had been doing illegally for 4 or 5 years. And it also is now offered future amnesty immunity for communications service companies that turn over your records to the government.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't sue them even if you were improperly identified as someone whose records should be obtained.
Well, take a moment, because you're inside the Beltway there, and I was all the way out of the country on vacation and pretty fully unplugged when that bill passed. And I was stunned, Bob, that the Democrats even let it go to the floor. What happened there, and was there some kind of a deal?
Well, there was a framework for a deal. Basically, the argument that was raised by Congressman Boehner and others was that the FISA court had, a few months ago, objected for a very narrow reason to some of these warrantless wiretaps. And the point was that if say, one terror suspect is talking to another terror suspect, both of them overseas, And if their communication is routed through a U.S. Communications company, is a warrant required? Now, obviously, that was not the intent of the law. That in those cases, warrants are not required. But a very easy fix, one sentence law could have been passed, which people wouldn't even notice, to take care of that. But instead, that became the basis for negotiations that went on, and then essentially the administration and the Republicans in Congress pulled a fast one on the Democrats. As the Democrats and Congress wanted to adjourn for August, the administration said, if you adjourn without giving us what we want, we will say you're soft on terror and are more interested in your vacation than the country's security. So at that point, the Democrats essentially capitulated and gave the president not only what he'd asked for, they gave him a much broader law that strips away many of the safeguards that even the administration had favored at one point.
Yeah.
And if you were outside the country, Peter, the only real phrasing in that law is that any person who is outside, who is believed to be outside the United States and who may possess information useful for U.S. foreign policy can be subjected to this one-year-long certification to collect your emails, your phone calls, and pretty much anything else they want. All it requires is for you to be outside the country. So it doesn't deal with terror suspects. It doesn't deal with people who are actually trying to harm the United States, even.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very broad, open-ended blank check.
Well, I'm still very upset about this. Vexed is the word I would use. And it's hard to believe that the Democrats could be flim-flammed again. I mean, it happened with the Military Commissions Act. This administration has successfully intimidated the Democrats on so many occasions that, it's really frustrating to the point where it's hard to have much confidence in their ability to follow through on the key elements that most progressives thought our leaders got the message on from the last election. Let's take a phone call here. Ben from Salinas, thanks for holding. You're up on the air here on the Peter B. Collins Show with Robert Perry.
Yeah, Peter, maybe McNerney went over there and tripped over some of that missing money Bremer can't find, and maybe they should be looking in his freezers.
All right, we'll ask him.
But I have a question for you and your guests, which is burning in my heart. From August 6th until a few days after 9/11 in 2001, Mr. Cheney made 6 visits directly one-on-one to tenants' office. That is a matter of record. Now, since tenants' credibility is being brought to the bar, shouldn't the minutes, and you know they take minutes to protect themselves, shouldn't the minutes of those meetings and that agenda, that whatever they discussed, I remember at the time people were wondering, well, what's Cheney doing over there if Bush is supposed to be president? Now, we need to know that question, just like we need to know that guard that was on duty that morning of 9/11 when Cheney was at the console and Norma Mineta walked in. There's a duty roster. That officer that said, does that office still hold when the plane was at 10 miles of the Twin Towers, when he said, does the order still hold? We need to know, what was that order, who signed it, and who that officer was.
Good questions, Ben. Bob, your comment?
Well, I think the Bush administration has obviously been one of the most secretive in history. And one thing that has always struck me, since I've also dealt with the Reagan-Bush years, one of the first acts that George W. Bush undertook when he entered the White House on January 20th, 2001, was to sign an executive order which effectively sealed off records that were supposed to be released, records for going back to 1981 and the beginning of the Reagan-Bush years. So, and then later on, after 9/11, Bush Jr. extended that to make it a permanent ban, effectively, on those documents ever being released unless without the approval of not only the principals, not only Vice President George H.W. Bush, President George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush, but their heirs after they're dead. Jenna and Barbara Bush will have control, apparently, of all these records. So the American people have been essentially sealed off from much of our history.
Yeah. And it's interesting because in the last week or so, Hillary Clinton has been dinged by Republican echo chambers for being slow to release some of her White House files related to the health care bills and other issues that she took on. And while it, you know, clearly for political reasons, she's going to slow that down and keep it from happening until after 08, to hear the conservatives, the Republicans, attack her for that, it's just priceless.
Well, using all the divide-and-conquer methods that they're using with Obama and Hillary and Edwards and all that shenanigans going off, the 2008 election is not a done deal by far, and we could still wind up with Jeb Bush, and God help us if we do. Thank you, Peter.
All right, Ben. Appreciate the call today. And, Bob Perry, you had an interesting item in this article about the Democrats regarding Air America and the failure of the Democrats and progressives to fund progressive independent media. And I know that, I certainly identify with what you said, and also I know that you and many others, Carolyn Kay, who writes the Make Them Accountable website, Rob over at opednews.com, many people who do a great job and who pour themselves into getting good information and analysis out to people around the country, are doing it on a shoestring budget. And, in the last election cycle, Soros and others pumped millions of dollars, $65 million went into Air America alone. And now that money is not available. And, I can't find anybody who's out there saying, gosh, I want to make sure that progressive media outlets survive.
Well, basically, after the election in 2006, the progressive community, to a great extent, seemed to lose interest in media. It's not something that I would say historically the progressives have wanted to support. It's, there's been more of an interest in areas like organizing or in doing actual direct kinds of programs like helping the poor or buying up endangered wetlands and that sort of thing. But that's essentially allowed the right to invest heavily in these areas without being challenged. And I come at it from a mainstream journalistic point of view. I was in AP and Newsweek, and I saw firsthand the way that growing media in the 80s and the attack groups that were set up to go after individual reporters, the effect that had in intimidating mainstream journalists from doing their jobs. People were facing loss of their livelihood if they reported accurately and honestly on things that the Reagan-Bush crowd did not want reported on. You know, the neoconservatives really rose up during that period, and part of their genius, if you will, was the idea of controlling information flows. And they felt if they could, they called it perception management, if they could control how Americans perceived events abroad, usually by using fear tactics and other things, they felt they could manipulate the American people into supporting policies. And it turned out they were right. But one of the reasons they were right is that because there was no real pushback on media from the more progressive side.
We got to take a break. We'll return with Robert Perry. ConsortiumNews.com is his website. More in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs, and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas. And we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it 5 times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters. Weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour as we continue our conversation with Robert Parry, P-A-R-R-Y. He's at ConsortiumNews.com. And I made a little mistake earlier when I was referencing his new book called Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. You should go to the publisher's website at neckdeepbook.com, because that's where the $5 bonus goes to ConsortiumNews.com. So go ahead and check that out. And if you go to the website, all that information is right there with hot links to make it easy for you. Bob, I wanted to ask you next about a news story that we just saw and my able assistant producer, Brian Urban, brought to my attention. Ed Markey, who's a liberal congressman from Massachusetts and chairs the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee, has written a letter to Michael Chertoff, the Homeland Security Secretary, demanding some answers about a new spying initiative. And it appears that when it's boiled down, that the plan is to use military satellites to